presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We are very close to the start of Georgia practice, and that'll kick off the proceedings here for the 2017 season. And as we get ready to do that, there is optimism in the air when it comes to some of the national insiders. I saw a piece at ESPN.com that I thought was pretty interesting. And I've done a lot of this stuff over the course of the offseason. I think this is a good content series from them. They take their preseason top 25, and they'll kind of pick out these little storylines and nuggets, and they'll kind of regenerate that over and over again. So what they did this time was the I forget what the overall headline here is. Let me see. It's basically like the top storyline for each of these teams as they get ready to begin practice. The official headline is, let me see if I describe this right. Boy, it takes a while to scroll back. Biggest August storyline for each top 25 team. That's the headline there from ESPN.com. And Georgia's ranked number 13 in the ESPN.com preseason poll. And what they say the biggest August storyline for Georgia is, as it gets ready to begin practice, Alex Scarborough is your writer here. He says, like a lot of teams in the SEC, the Bulldogs' playoff hopes are likely to hinge on a young second-year starting quarterback's development. Quarterback Jacob Eason flashed a cannon for an arm and a penchant for big plays as a true freshman, but consistency was an issue, Scarborough writes. If he can find that and a couple of playmakers at wide receiver, Georgia's offense could be dangerous. How about that last sentence if you're a Georgia fan? Could the Georgia offense be dangerous this upcoming season? Well, Georgia fans certainly hope so, but you also get the impression here as of late, maybe over the last few weeks, that there wasn't maybe a lot of optimism about the Georgia offense from at least some of the folks. I mean, remember, if you want to go back to, like, say, May or June, I think a lot of us around here thought Georgia was going to be the prohibitive favorite to win the SEC East. But the closer you got to the actual official pick starting to come out, the more there was a case that was made for Florida. Now, ultimately, when the media voted at SEC Media Days, Georgia, by a slight margin, did kind of emerge as the favorite to win the division, but not by a wide degree. But I'll tell you right now that if what Alex Scarborough writes at ESPN.com proves to be true, that the Georgia offense is even anything close to dangerous, then the rest of the SEC East and maybe the rest of the SEC better watch out, because I think we can take it as a given that the Georgia defense is going to be good. There's too many talented guys returning for that unit not to step up for the Dogs this season in a big way. And if a guy like Scarborough, if his suggestion proves true, that's great news for Georgia. But how likely is it to prove true? Well, maybe to some degree, maybe more likely than folks think. Let's talk at first about Jacob Eason's development. That's the one thing that Alex Scarborough suggests needs to happen here. Well, what we know from Kirby Smart is, and this came up on the show yesterday, and I think it may have come up during the comment portion of the show, but nonetheless, it came up on the show yesterday, that Kirby Smart right now seems to be optimistic about exactly where things are heading with Jacob Eason moving towards this upcoming season. Remember, if you go back to spring practice, Kirby Smart was all about the notion of competition and Eason being pushed by Jake Fromm. But at SEC Media Days, when Smart spoke about this, he wasn't really talking that way. He was talking about this being Jacob Eason's team. And Seth Emerson and others, when they've been here on Dog Nation Daily, have suggested that the reason why Kirby Smart's talking that way is because he's noticed some of the development that Eason's gone through during the summer, even if some of that's had to take place away from the watchful eye of coaches. The Peyton Manning Passing Academy and some of that extra work is kind of what's cited there. So maybe there is reason for hope and reason to believe that Jacob Eason truly is going to develop and be a better player as a sophomore than he was as a freshman. I think it's been interesting to watch this conversation unfold on this program when guys like former coach Jim Donnan have been on here. He's talked about the need for Eason to challenge himself, make the deeper, more dangerous throw, stretch the field vertically, force opposing defenses to have to think about an extra element when it comes to Georgia. Pairing that with obviously the great running game certainly gives you a terrific opportunity to live up to the word that Alex Scarborough uses there, maybe be a dangerous offense. But how about the idea of playmakers at wide receiver? That's obviously, I think, maybe just behind the offensive line, maybe the biggest question for Georgia to answer in this upcoming season. Are there going to be true playmakers at wide receiver? And I don't mean candidates. We already know that Georgia's got plenty of candidates to be wide receivers, and a lot of them are very interesting, whether it's Mecole Hardman sliding over and playing in that spot this year, whether it's a freshman like J.J. Holloman, whether it's Terry Godwin finally living up to the billing of what he was as a five-star athlete coming out of high school. There's no shortage of candidates for who it could be, but what Georgia fans want to find out is who it is going to be, and is it going to happen? Now, when Kirby Smart closed out the spring, he said, he wasn't really sure if Georgia had a go-to guy at receiver. And this might be a receiving core that has to get it done by committee. That's fine if that's just coach speak, but if that's the way it actually ends up being in 2017, then Georgia's offense is probably going to fall short of being dangerous. That's one of the things that makes that Appalachian State game, I think, so interesting for Georgia. Even though it's not the high-profile Notre Dame game, it's not the national television audience that you'll get from the Dogs and Irish in week two on NBC, that game against Appalachian State to start the season is a chance to see just how much of what Alex Scarborough writes here to ESPN really does come to pass. Does Eason show evidence of better development? Does he get more help from his wide receiving core? And does a pecking order of favorite targets emerge? Obviously, Isaac Nott is going to be one of those guys at the tight end, but are there more challenging deep threats at a wide receiver? If it is, then Georgia probably is going to be a dangerous offense. And a dangerous offense from Georgia paired with a defense that could be among the best in the SEC could be a real load for the rest of the SEC East to deal with. One more thing I want to bring up here before we move on in the show. And this is, I guess, where you get to the bad news portion of the program here. Georgia does lose a recruiting battle yesterday as Kingsley Ngabare, the three-star defensive end from Hapeville Charter, chooses South Carolina over Georgia. And I think it's been really kind of interesting to watch the message board chatter about this over the last 24 hours. And I think some of it, and I know there's a lot of this right now at forum.dognation.com. I don't necessarily disagree with this. I guess there's some criticism of Trey Scott for maybe losing out on another guy that would have been a nice addition to the Dogs 2018 class. Now, Ngabare is just a three-star prospect, but it does continue a trend of, you know, Georgia lost out on Stephon Wynn. Georgia lost out on Brenton Cox. Wynn chose Alabama. Cox chose Penn State or Ohio State. You don't necessarily fault either guy for making that decision. Those are powerhouse programs. Ngabare choosing South Carolina, though, is maybe a little bit more of a head-scratcher for some fans. I think the important thing to bring up here, and this is not my way of excusing this recruiting loss. I would not try to do that at all. But I do think it speaks to a challenge that Kirby Smart and Georgia face in the recruiting trail, and maybe even Trey Scott faces in particular. This ability for a school like South Carolina to say, do you want to go and be one of the guys on Georgia's roster, or do you want to come to South Carolina and have a chance to be the guy on this roster? And we know that's just a sales pitch. Maybe it's going to be true. Maybe it's not. Maybe Muschamp means that. Maybe doesn't. But the assumption is that's probably the sales pitch that he's using. It's probably going to work on some people. I think you can say that probably worked on Jamias Williams last year. That may work on Rick Sandage this year. That seems to be maybe working on Trey Dean a little bit for South Carolina as well. But Muschamp, who's always been a formidable recruiter, and when he was at Florida as the head coach, he had, you know, powerhouse program, chance to play for a national championship. He had that to pitch, and I'm sure he sold that well. Now at South Carolina, it would seem that he's selling something just a little bit different, and I think if you're a Georgia fan, you've got to respect his ability to sell that too. For that kind of middle-tier prospect, that kind of middle-tier recruit, a guy who may only contribute to Georgia's depth but has a chance to be a starter, a potential star at South Carolina, that's obviously maybe a little easier sell for the Gamecocks. I guess the other thing that is maybe a little disappointing here for some Georgia fans is that Ngabare's school, Hapeville Charter, is a school that's been good to Georgia here in the recent past, but that tie doesn't exactly help out here. The honest truth is I'm not exactly sure what all to make of this. I know it's going to ignite some passions from some people in our comment section on Facebook Live because they look at what's already kind of a dearth of quality 2018 defensive linemen. And when you see a couple of those slipping away, that starts to make some Georgia fans feel anxious about the current state of this class on the defensive side of the ball and the current state of the position coach who's in charge of bringing some of those guys in. I think they're all fair questions to ask, and hopefully over the course of the next few days, Georgia fans will get a few more commitments to make you feel pretty good here about the one that got away. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, and we are so glad to have you with us. Whether you're watching us on Facebook Live right now, of course, we're 10 a.m. each and every Monday through Friday on Facebook Live. You can also check us out on the radio if you're in the Athens area at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and then anywhere in the world, any time of the day or night, you can check us out in podcast form. We'll put it up for you on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. We'll post the show at DogNation.com. I know some of you listen through the desktop or through your phone right there at DogNation.com. We appreciate you doing that, kind of however you access the show. We're always happy to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, and hope you'll make plans to be with us this upcoming Tuesday night We're going to be at the Marlowe Sandy Springs location for our final Dog Nation Invasion giveaway, courtesy this time of our friends at Marlowe's. And as we've been telling you, we want you to be aware of how this giveaway may be different than some of the ones we've done in the past. This is a one-day contest, which I think increases your chances to win, which makes it all the more reason why you want to get in on this one day. It's going to be Tuesday, August the 1st, and here's the way it's going to go. You're going to text the word Marlowe's, that's M-A-R-L-O-W-S, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. Text Marlowe's to 24242 on Tuesday, August the 1st, and you'll have your chance to enter to win our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway, courtesy of Marlowe's. That's going to put you on the Dog Nation Invasion bus going from Chicago to South Bend. We'll bring you back. It's also tickets, lodging, airfare to the big one in South Bend this September. We hope you win. We hope you're here for us on that. And, of course, when you think about Marlowe's, remember, you can't bottle happiness, but Marlowe's keeps plenty on tap. So stop in for your favorite and some new summer features, too, like our juicy chicken stack with fresh green beans and arugula. We look forward to serving you soon. Cheers. Of course, that's all courtesy of Marlowe's. You can find out more from them online at marlowestavern.com. I'll also tell you, it's time for our Gator Hater Countdown. We are now 92 days away from Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville this October. We believe that Georgia fans are Gator Haters. At least they should be. That's why we want you to go to shopdognation.com, get a Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirt with the Dog Nation Daily logo in the sleeve, the Gator Hater license plate on the front. We'll get the sizes in stock for you. We'll give you free shipping. Hope you check that out at shopdognation.com. Now, and coming up in just a moment, we're going to welcome in Mike Johnson, my partner on SEC Country Live, here on to Dog Nation Daily today. Always a lot of fun to have him with us. For now, enjoy Mike Johnson. Great to have you with us on the program. And we will get ready to say hello to our good buddy here. He is Mike Johnson. He covers the SEC for us each and every day on SEC Country Live. Always a lot of fun to have him here on Dog Nation Daily. Mike, let me first of all say good morning to you. Welcome back to the program. How you doing?
Man, thanks for having me, brother. It's always a pleasure to talk on these Thursday mornings.
Yeah, it really is. Always fun. And one of the things I want to get your perspective on is something that we were actually just talking about a few minutes ago before you joined us. Alex Scarborough, ESPN.com, was talking about one of Georgia's big storylines heading into the upcoming season, and he suggested the offense could be dangerous if you get more from Jacob Eason in terms of development, if that's taking place in the summer months and in these practices that are about to begin, and maybe you can find some playmakers at wide receiver. Is dangerous too optimistic of a word to use for you for Georgia's offense, or is that crossing that threshold of possibility this season?
No, yeah, I think dangerous is a good word. Alex obviously always does a good job covering SEC football, and I think he chose his words correctly. I think he's on point in terms of what needs to be done. And it does come down to Jacob Eason, his ability to kind of thrive in this Jim Chaney system and get the protection he needs and get the running game he needs. And I think we'll see a lot of that. I don't know, you know, how dangerous they will be this year, but I think they have the ability to do that. I think the talent is there. When you look at that offense from all angles and all perspectives, there's no reason that dangerous can't be the word. I think they have to be multifaceted. I think they have to have that attack through the air to be able to open up some of those running lanes. But if you get all the talent on the field that you seem to have on the offensive side of the ball, and you have your five-star quarterback in Jacob Eason delivering the ball and delivering it on time and delivering it with accuracy, then I've told you this, BA, a couple times. The sky's the limit. I mean, it really is. I don't want to discredit anything they're doing and act like they cannot be an elite offense, because I think they have the players there. We just have to look at the development of the wide receiver position, the development of the two guard positions and some of the offensive line spots, and the development of the quarterback.
You know, one of the things that I also brought up a moment ago is, and maybe all fans feel this way about their school, but in the case of Georgia, that Appalachian State game, it's not going to get a lot of national attention. You know, if you watch those game day final shows or SportsCenter the next morning or whatever highlight shows even on TV these days, it changes so much. You're probably not going to see a lot of Georgia Appalachian State highlights in comparison to some of the other week one games. But for Georgia, this is not a game to sleep through if you're a fan, because you'll see some evidence of just how much Eason's grown. You'll see some evidence of, has a playmaking wide receiver stepped up? We know that Nada's a great tight end, but is there a wide receiver that Eason can trust as much as he trusts Nada? You'll see that in week one, and so that game against the Mountaineers is not really a game for a Georgia fan to not be paying close attention to, at least in my mind.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, if you think for 1 second that Appalachian State's not going to have their war paint on coming into that game, I mean, they to me, they've caused a lot of problems for a lot of big football teams. And Georgia could just be the latest on the list. And listen, Louisiana Monroe has done it to a couple teams in the West. I think Appalachian State's done it to a few teams in the East. And You have to be ready for that. And I think you're right. I think it's a big indicator of what you're going to be dealing with for most of the year. Is the leadership there? Is the leadership there to be able to get, you know, this football team ready and prepared for a football game to start the year against a down, you know, not a down team like Appalachian State, but not somebody you're circling on the calendar, especially with Notre Dame there in week two. I think it's tough. I think it says a lot about the older heads on the team and the coaching positions and the maturity level of the guys you're dealing with across all levels of that football team to be able to get ready for that game week one. And hopefully they come out and are successful. Hopefully they come out and are able to execute the game plan the way that they implemented it throughout the summer and throughout the week. But, you know, it remains to be seen. And I think it's a scary game for a lot of different reasons. And they're going to have to be ready to go to war there in week one.
You played in the NFL and you played in college, and my assumption is, you tell me if I'm right or wrong about this, that the attitude about the beginning of practice is probably very different at those levels of play. You know, NFL teams are beginning training camp right now. I'm assuming that for most NFL players, this is a grind in which they don't really look forward to. Obviously, it's really hot, but these are pros. They've done this a million times. They like to sort of fast forward through this and get this over. My assumption is, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but for the college kids, Georgia about to begin practice next week, that sort of maybe dreading it attitude doesn't exist. You're younger, you're fresher, you re-energize more quickly, you regenerate that energy more quickly. Maybe there's a little more excitement about the beginning of practice for a college kid than there is for a pro player. Is that a fact or fiction?
I don't want to pull the curtain back on some of these football players, B.A., but I think it's probably fiction both
really?
Ways. I think for different reasons. Look, first of all, the NFL training camp, the preseason, is a lot longer. And I think that when you're in the NFL, I mean, think about it. They're starting right now. A lot of colleges haven't even started camp, and the NFL starts a week after the college games do. So that's a long grind. I think that, you know, in the NFL, you have the union, and they kind of, you know, put a max on some of the things you can do. In terms of college kids, though, they're looking forward to starting classes. They're getting prepared. You know, they're finishing summer school, looking forward to classes starting and being able to get on campus and dealing with a lot of other things at the teenage level that you don't have to deal with in the NFL, you know. The NFL, a lot of these guys have families. They're just worried about, hey, I'm not going to see my kids for a couple weeks. College, you know, there's girlfriends, there's parents, there's, you know, getting these trips lined up, and a lot of other things going on. I think it's a grind either way you slice it. I don't know that I don't know that nobody per se really looked forward to training camp. I just think you have different objectives when you're in each of those two levels, and you try to get them done to the best of your ability. It's a grind, and you have to be able to push yourself mentally to get over some of those hurdles and not feel sorry for yourself and say you're tired and say it's hot, but instead be able to focus on the things that you need to do to get yourself better and your team better moving towards the season.
So I'm honestly curious about this. So let's say I'm an offensive lineman, like you know, someone in your shoes would have been. We're here just a couple days away from this. Is there a nervous feeling in my stomach? Is it that feeling of dread of, oh, it's going to be hot and Sam Pittman's going to yell at me? Is it that sort of raring to go? I want to go out there and hit somebody because I've been lifting weights all summer. I want to show folks how strong I am. I mean, I want you to be honest and truthful here. What is the feeling of an offensive lineman or just any football player in terms of here we are a couple days away? I mean, which of those descriptions probably fits the best?
Well, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about offensive linemen, because I think it's different, you know, with different position groups you're looking at. I think it's also different with age. I think when you're a returning starter and you're a guy that, you know, is coming back and trying to fine-tune some of the things you worked on last year and were able to exceed at last year or excel at last year, then I think that, you know, you have a different perspective. I think you're going into saying, you know what, this is an opportunity to get better. I want to fine-tune some of the things in my game. I want to be able to work on this small thing like, launch angle or head placement or hand placement or, you know, punch from the chest. I think when you're a younger guy and you have that hunger, you're probably looking to forward to a lot more of the competition, getting yourself noticed, you know, getting on the field and showing that these coaches that you can run with the twos or run with the ones and not be a sore thumb that kind of sticks out. And you kind of want to make a name for yourself. So I think it's approached in two different directions. I think no matter what position you're playing, you probably have a different way of looking at things. I would have loved to have gone in training camp as a you know, a wide receiver, you know, that's just breaking off these routes and, you know, not even involved in the play half the time. But that just, that's not the nature of the beast for offensive line. And I think it's just, you know, we're offensive line as a brand, we're a little bit heavier, a little bit fatter, a little bit slower. And it's a grind either way. I know that those guys have ups and downs, but I think it's just all depending on your situation going into camp and your standing with the football team.
One of the things we talked about on SEC Country Live yesterday was what Steve Spurrier had told SBNation.com about not just his pride in beating Georgia in 2007, which is the series that SB Nation was doing, but his pride in being the head coach that's beaten Georgia, I guess, more than anybody has. And the point that I think I made with you yesterday, and I have definitely made here on this show, is that as irritating as Spurrier's zingers might be over the years for Georgia fans, I do think there's an element in which college football teams kind of need a foe, right? They kind of need some sort of foil, some sort of person who keeps you from getting too complacent, some sort of enemy, perhaps, who kind of keeps you from getting a little too big in your britches, or you know, just maybe not going out there with that same edge every day. And I think now that Spurrier's gone as a coach, I think Georgia finding that next foe, that next rival to kind of energize you, I do think that's someone that plays an important role for college football teams. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, and listen, me and you have talked about Tommy Tuberville a bunch. I was not a fan of his. You know, most Alabama fans that, you know, remember Tommy Tuberville kind of walking in and out of the stadium after they've won, you know, five in a row and holding up his hand, you know, saying five. That's kind of the foe that Steve Spurrier was to Georgia in my eyes. And I think that it's tough to kind of place Will Muschamp in that role, being as how, you know, he is a Georgia guy. And so they need something to grasp on. Is it going to be Paul Johnson? Is it going to be Jim McElwain? It's tough to say, because I think both those guys are very calculated in some of their comments and you know, probably aren't going to step outside the box as much as Steve Spurrier. And we talked about yesterday, it's a different day and age. The comments coming out are calculated. Even Brett Bielema the other day, you know, he's got calculated comments on Hugh Freeze. And you're just missing the Steve Spurrier and the Les Miles and some of the more quotable guys in and around that weren't afraid to say what they thought. You know, yeah. Steve Spurrier poking at Florida State, you know, Free Shoes University and that whole bit. And college football as a whole is missing some of these guys, and I think it's just it's a different chapter as far as college football coaches go.
I want to get back to Georgia to close out our conversation in a moment, but I was actually thinking about you this morning when I was kind of reading and getting ready for this show, because in that same ESPN article that I referenced at the start of our interview, they were talking about August storylines for a couple other SEC teams like Alabama and LSU, and I was looking at these two maybe potential contenders in the SEC West and how different these storylines are. For LSU, it's about the offense and Danny Etling fully taking the reins as quarterback there in Baton Rouge. For Auburn, it's more about the defense and Kevin Steele having a second season as good as, I think, surprisingly, his first season was there at Auburn. So if we're looking for a team to potentially challenge Alabama in the West, what do you think's a bigger concern, LSU's offense or Auburn's defense?
I think at this point it's Auburn's defense, and I think that until LSU and Matt Canada come out and prove that they could be multifaceted, that they're not going to scare Alabama's defense. And we've talked about it a few times that Les Miles, that old school style of offense where it's just bang it up straight ahead and take advantage of the linebackers in the first level, that just doesn't work against Nick Saban's defense. And I think that in order to kind of knock them off, they're going to have to become multifaceted. And listen, you know, I think you need a dynamic person at the quarterback position. I don't know if Etling is the guy. So I think I got to go with Auburn's defense. And Kevin Steele knows the ins and outs of a lot of things that happen in Alabama. He was an Alabama coach when I was there. He's worked in the office at Alabama. He understands the pieces you need in place, especially along the defense line and linebacker core, to be able to beat an Alabama offense, be able to beat an Alabama football team. And I think they've got that. I think they've got the depth. I think they've got the talent. I think they've got some incredible pieces at the linebacking position and a lot of talent on the front on that line. So the front seven specifically of that defense I think has to concern you if you're an Alabama fan. You know, I don't love Auburn and some of their matchups, but I think that if you're looking and weighing the two, I definitely look down there to Auburn, Alabama, to the Plains as far as that defense goes.
All right, let's finish up with this. And, Mike, I want to be completely honest with you about something. And one of the things I hope people appreciate about not just Dog Nation Daily but SEC Country Live as well, we are incredibly responsive to our audience. I'm always listening to what people are saying, what they like, what they don't like, what makes them happy, what makes them mad. And to that end, Mike, yesterday – we had on Ryan Fowler on our show, and I know you know Ryan. He's the host of the Alabama podcast for SECCountry.com. When I tell you that he made my audience furious yesterday, you talked about the phrase putting on war paint earlier. My audience yesterday was sort of like William Wallace in Braveheart or like Rambo in First Blood. They were ready to go after him. And the essential point that he made is, first of all, he picked Florida to win the SEC East, which is not an indefensible position, but and part of his explanation for why Florida, he thinks, going to win the SEC East, he essentially said that Kirby Smart's got to show him something and that he's not necessarily as impressed with Kirby Smart right now as he thought he might be getting ready to go into a second season. I don't think I'm putting words into his mouth by saying that. I think that's an essential, pretty much a paraphrase of what he said there yesterday. And I think the response from my audience is, to be fair to Kirby, whether you think Georgia's going to win the East or not, it is unfair to say that Kirby Smart hasn't shown anything since he's been the Georgia coach. What I think the Dog Nation audience would have said to the Georgia critic yesterday is that this is a guy who put a number three overall recruiting class together for 2017, taking some players that Alabama desperately wanted. And in 2018, the same thing could also be true, taking some other players that Alabama would have really liked to have, like Zamir White, the five-star running back, for instance, potentially maybe even Justin Fields, the five-star quarterback, who Alabama can't even get a call back from. So I think what, you know, some Georgia fans would say is that even though it was only 8-5 on the field, there is evidence that Georgia's doing more than it had been doing in recruiting before Smart got there, including taking some players that Alabama would have wanted. Is that an unfair response from a Georgia fan to one of his program's critics?
I don't know if it's unfair, and I don't agree with Ryan Fowler. I am more on the side of what a, you know, a Georgia fan's response would be. Listen, for all the good things that Ryan says, to me, I don't know if Jim McElwain's shown us anything either. You know what I mean? I think that when you can talk about Kirby Smart there in year one, and I think he had a decent year for his first year ever as a head coach, but it's not like Jim McElwain's blowing you away. I mean, he hasn't been in the ballpark of Florida State yet. He beat LSU by a yard, basically, to get to Atlanta, and lost some close games to some teams that you just wonder how it happened. Tennessee in the second half, I mean, absolutely falls apart. And so I think there's questions to be asked about everybody in the East. I think it's fair to question Kirby Smart to a certain extent. I think it's fair to question, obviously, Butch Jones and Jim McElwain and some of the other coaches. I think it says a lot that most of the voters from some of the media polls have been split down the middle. You know, Florida, Georgia, even sprinkling a little bit of South Carolina in there. You're just not sure what you're going to get. You're not sure the development of a Kirby Smart as a head coach. You're not sure the development of a Jake Beeson. But you're not sure, you know, what Jim McElwain actually is. You're not sure what Randy Shannon is, or that defense is, or Malik Zaire. So, question either way. You know, I don't think that you can, you know, throw Ryan Fowler to the fire and say, you know what, he's just dead wrong. Kirby Smart probably does have to prove some things. But listen, I've been around both those guys, and I think that's why I understand what Kirby is. I understand his mentality as a coach, and that's probably why I give him the benefit of the doubt. I know he's a knowledgeable guy. I know he's an incredibly smart coach, X's and O's coach as well as recruiter. And so I have full faith that he's going to be able to pull that off there in Athens. But you know me, I like to see it done on the field. So I don't think, you know, listen, I'm not going to feed Ryan Fowler to the wolves, but I do disagree with him to a certain extent.
Hey, Mike, it's always great to have you on Dog Nation Daily, but also looking forward to SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. Eastern Time this afternoon on the SEC Country Facebook page. We'll see you then.
Absolutely, man. I'll see you later this afternoon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always love Mike Johnson here on Dog Nation Daily. He's my partner on SEC Country Live. That's a really fun show to do. And Mike, good enough to spend some time with us here on Dog Nation Daily, too. And that's always a really nice thing to have as well. Mike Johnson will not be with us on the Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend, though. But our friends from Larceny Bourbon will be with us, because we couldn't do it without them and would not want to go without Larceny Bourbon. I can promise you that. And if you're wondering what Larceny Bourbon is, well, I'll tell you. It's a 92-proof, weeded, small-batch bourbon made from 200 barrels or less, hand-selected by their master distillers from the finest barrels in the rickhouse. You can unlock the smoothest today at LarcenyBourbon.com, and Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely, and boy, it's going to be a good time in South Bend, and Larceny Bourbon going to be a big part of that with us. One of the things, if you watch, by the way, it's our SEC Through now. I hope you'll watch SEC Country Live 3 p.m. Eastern Time today, SEC Country Facebook page. But one of the things that we'll do on the show today, and sometimes simple questions are just fantastic. And if y'all listen to me interview, sometimes my questions have a way of not really being all that simple. Sometimes they can drag on, be a little long. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but I have a tendency to be a little long-winded at times. But nonetheless, the simple questions sometimes are the best. And to that point, I thought one of the SportsCenter anchors, and I forget which one it was, but I thought he asked a simple, direct question to Saban yesterday. Nick Saban, the Alabama coach, was at ESPN. And I thought the exchange was just really interesting. We'll play you the whole thing on SEC Country Live later on this afternoon. But the general gist of it is this. the interviewer asked Saban, "Do you say Roll Tide?" And I don't know, for something about that question, I find to be absolutely fascinating. And what Saban essentially acknowledged is that people say Roll Tide to him all the time, but he doesn't really start a conversation with Roll Tide. Maybe he'll give a Roll Tide back, but he kind of sidestepped the idea of just how much he says Roll Tide, which is, you know, kind of funny to even hear him talking about that. You wonder, what would be so wrong with you saying Roll Tide? You know, we've seen Saban do a lot of other things. He put the hat on backwards. He's done that weird sort of vampire-looking dance after they've won championships. Why not say Roll Tide? Kind of an interesting thing from Saban there. We'll play it for you on SEC Country Live today, but apparently he's not too fond of saying Roll Tide, which other folks around the SEC would certainly join him in feeling that way. Saw with the Texas A&M chancellor. His name is John Sharp. He wants to bring back the rivalry with Texas. Now, we already know that Tom Herman wants to bring this back. He's the Longhorns coach now. Sharp, the Aggies chancellor, wants to do it too. So if you're, you know, sort of looking at this thing from 30,000 feet, you'd say, well, that settles it. I guess these teams are going to be playing really soon. Somehow I get the feeling it'll be a lot more complicated than that. And both these sides, the posturing of, yeah, we want to play, and yeah, we want to do this. Somehow behind closed doors, when the suits take over, this kind of stuff will have a way of maybe slowing down and not happening. And most of this audience doesn't really care if Texas plays Texas A&M. They wonder when Georgia's going to play Texas A&M more than when Texas is going to play Texas A&M. But I do think this is an example of what college football needs less of, the kind of passive-aggressive posturing of, we want to play you, but then when it's time to do bowl pairings, for instance, you always hear these whispers of, you know, asking for favors from the leagues to make sure you don't have to play a team from Texas. That's what Texas A&M's been, I think, accused of in the past. That kind of passive-aggressive stuff's not good for college football, but it also leads you to wonder, if Texas and then Texas A&M don't play anymore, and right now they don't, is it a guarantee that Georgia will always play Georgia Tech? It's non-conference rival at the end of the season? Listen, there's stranger things happening in this sport all the time than the clean old-fashioned hate being disbanded. I think it's fun to play Georgia Tech at the end of season, but I don't know it's a guarantee the Dogs and the Jackets will always play. We've seen a lot of stuff change in college football here in recent years. Speaking of in-state rivalries, I saw a really interesting comment from, I'm terrible about pronouncing the recruits' names. Dacrion, is that how you say his name? Dacrion Joyner, quarterback going to South Carolina. He's kind of one of those dual threat guys who's, you know, maybe thought of a little bit of as an athlete, kind of rising as a stock when it comes to a quarterback. I guess Clemson did not want him as a quarterback, would have liked to have him as an athlete. Gamecocks going to give him a chance to play quarterback. And what Joyner put on his Snapchat filter, feed, whatever you call it, is that as a quarterback starting for South Carolina, he's never going to lose to Clemson. That's a pretty bold statement for a guy that's not on campus yet and may not ever actually be South Carolina's true starting quarterback. And I guess I'm kind of curious as exactly how Georgia fans would respond to that if a Georgia recruit talked that big about a Georgia rival, be it Auburn or Tennessee, Georgia Tech or Florida. Now, I think I would probably enjoy it. I think I'd probably be entertained by it. I think some Georgia fans might think that's too much too soon. I'm curious also how Gamecock fans kind of think the same thing when it comes to Joyner here. Is this too much too soon from him, or does this kind of add fuel to a rivalry that from the South Carolina side of things could use a little juice? Right now, Clemson's playing for national championships, having great success. Maybe this young man talking big talk here, maybe that gets Gamecock fans fired up. We'll have to see how that goes, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, as we wrap up here today on Dog Nation Daily, I want to invite you to check out SEC Country Live from yesterday for one more reason. Go to the SEC Country Facebook page. You can see it archived there. We also archive it now at YouTube.com, SEC Country Live on YouTube, and you can also listen to it as a podcast on iTunes, very much the same way many of you listen to Dog Nation Daily. But yesterday we had Mike Griffith, who covers Tennessee for SECCountry.com, but he was talking yesterday about the Florida schedule and how it impacts Georgia. And what Mike alluded to is that the schedule change that was made because of the cancellation of the Florida LSU game last year, leading to LSU coming back to Gainesville this season, not only benefits Florida, but potentially at the expense of Georgia. Now, there's reason to debate this on both sides, but I thought that was a really interesting point from Mike. Tennessee reporter saying that Georgia's got an unfair shake. Listen to it and tell me what you think. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.